It's a million ways to tell it, but it's still the same story. It's the story of God who became man, who came to die that we might live. So this week, begin to think about how you can share that. And let's begin this morning by saying it together. Here we go. But the angel said to them, "Do not be afraid, for behold, I bring you good news of great joy, which will be for all the people. For today, in the city of David, there has been born for you a Savior, who is Christ the Lord." Luke 2, 10 and 11. Let's pray, and then let's consider God's word this morning. Lord, thank you for this morning, for a time of worship, for a time of praise, for a time of meditation. And now may the words of my mouth, the meditations of my heart, be acceptable in your sight, for you are my rock, your Son is my Redeemer. And it is in Jesus' precious name we ask these things. God's people said, amen. In my lifetime, I've been associated with four local churches. For the first 12 years of my life, I was part of the Hebron Baptist Church in a little central farming community in Hebron, Indiana. And between the ages of 12 and 15, when we had moved to Phoenix, my family was a part of Bible Baptist Church in Phoenix. And then at 15, our family made the switch to Westside Bible Church in Glendale, Arizona. And I was there from the age of 15 until 40. And then for the last 16 and a half years, I've served here and ministered beside you at a Church of the Canyons. And I was thinking this week as I looked at this whole topic of serving one another, a very, very important one another, that as I look back on all those churches and all the people and all the effects that were in my life in those times, obviously the pastors and the leaders and people who entered into my life in powerful ways were very, very important. But as I look back on now, some of my most lasting memories that I have are people who just had a very faithful heart of service. People that just entered into your life, no matter what, in whatever season, and just ministered to you, who just served you. And I just remember those people. I remember one, for instance, a man that I never saw since, but I'm 12 years old, and we're just getting ready to move to Phoenix. And my dad, on the advice of a doctor, had decided to move the family to a drier climate, that being Phoenix. And he had taken a job with a Coca-Cola company there. He transferred out to Phoenix. And he had gone out a month earlier to start the job and look for a house. In the meantime, it was my mom's responsibility with three small boys, ages 14, 12, 8, and a little baby, to straighten up, sell the house, put it all in boxes, put it in a U-Haul, and get everybody out to Phoenix. No small job when you think about it. So the people of the church came together on the appointed day to help pack up all of our stuff into this big U-Haul. By the end of the day, they had everything packed, but there was a problem. Although everything, the doors were closed, the living room sofa was still sitting in the living room. There was no room in the inn for the sofa. And so I remember my mom sitting on the sofa and wondering, what in the world are we going to do? We don't have enough money to get another U-Haul truck. We don't have enough money to buy another sofa, although we certainly could have used another sofa. And I remember a guy by the name of Howard Harris. How that came to me this week, I don't remember. He was a co-worker of my dad, and he went to our church. I remember of him as just a mounted of a man, a Gary Simpson of a man, I guess is the way to put it. He came over, he looked at the U-Haul, he looked at the sofa, and he says, "We can make that fit." And so he unloaded the U-Haul by himself with the help of us boys, to the point where he could reshuffle everything, got the sofa in, closed the door, and the rest is history. We went to Phoenix and had that sofa right through high school. And I thought about that today. Isn't it an interesting thing? Just one little bit of service that he brought into our lives really was very, very helpful to us. And I think as we went to Bible Baptist, when we first began, we're strangers to Phoenix, and people just surrounded us and helped us get set in. People allowed us to live in their house with them for periods of time. People just ministered to us. People just met our needs. And then of course, when we went to Westside, and I was 14 or 15 years old at that point in time, from being there from 15 to 40 is a valuable thing because you get to grow up with people and you develop bonds and you involve yourselves in people's life and they in yours. And I still have such fragrant memories from the people at that dear church who would do anything, anytime, anywhere to assist us, to minister to us, to walk us through sorrows and the joys of life together. And of course, how many stories could I tell of the good people here? Who in our time here have proven themselves to be such faithful servants in front and behind the scenes, who have sacrificially and consistently ministered. We have such servant-hearted leaders and such servant-hearted ministry teams and faithful prayer warriors and nursery and greeters, and it goes on and on. And then just in the background is all this one-on-one stuff that's happening of people entering into lives with constant helps and prayers and service and giving and encouraging, and it's all taking place on this one-on-one basis. Even yesterday, it was so fun to see just people scurrying around, starting to get things ready for today's greening of the church, and to be here this morning and see people already here as early as 7 o'clock, just getting ready to make sure that your and my service relationship here today would be valuable and heartening. Some people say, you know, in many churches that 80% of the work is done by 20% of the people. You've seen that. I'm so glad that doesn't take place here, that's not the way it is here, that so many people are involved in service in one way or another, one-on-one, side-by-side, in ministry groups, helping people in whatever is necessary. And so because of that, I feel like in some respects today it's a really easy message, because I feel like as the old Baptist minister used to say, I'm preaching to the choir today, because you get it, you already do this, but I think sometimes reminder lessons are really valuable, because every now and then we just need to be reminded of why it is that we serve one another and why that is so valuable to us. So I just want to start off with just kind of a question. It's not in your notes, but just something for you to think about. Why is it so important for us to serve one another? I mean, it's not like we're just sitting around waiting for things to do. I mean, it's not like our lives are so empty that we're sitting there by the phone just hoping someone from Church of the Canyons will call me up so that I can help them with something. I just have too much time on our hands. Nobody has that issue. In fact, we have just the opposite issue. We're overflowing with things that we need to do. And maybe for those of us who are a bit overflowing with things that we need to do, this is a timely message. Because particularly in this season where we need to learn to serve one another better, but in particular, maybe you've gotten so myopic, maybe you've just put the blinders on so much that you've forgotten the value of this gathering one another, serving one another, ministering to each other's needs, helping each other in their time of needs. Let's just remind ourselves so for just a moment what's so important about service. I think first of all, it's there because it opens our eyes to the needs of those who surround us. I think one of the most important things that happens on our Loft ministry trips to Mexico is not necessarily the little dwelling that's built, but it is an eye-opener for everyone to see what in the world is going on at our doorstep. You go 90 miles down the road, you cross a border, and things change dramatically. The rest of the world looks a lot different. And also even in our church, we come together on Sunday morning, we spend a few moments, we enjoy each other, but serving one another opens our eyes to the needs of each other. Also, serving enters us into deeper, more meaningful relationships with one another. When you and I just come together and we walk side by side to do whatever it is, It develops relationships. It deepens the relationship that we have with one another. And so that's very, very valuable. Thirdly, we see that serving reminds us of how self-serving we often are. What I find often is that when I finally come to the point of saying, well, I need to do something about it, I'm also convicted at that point in time of why it took me so long to get there, just how self-serving I often am. And if those don't move us to contemplate this or answer the question, certainly the words of Jesus ought to. It's just simply because Jesus said we ought to be servants, because Jesus lived his life as a servant, we really ought to do the same. What we're going to find today is simply this. When we serve one another in love, we conform ourselves more fully to the image of Christ, and we strengthen our one another relationships. We've been working hard as an elder team to kind of flesh out where we want to go for the next 10, 15, 20 years. And part of that is one of the pillars of where we're moving towards is that we are called to be conformed to the image of Christ. And from the moment we are saved all the way through to mature service, we are to be becoming more and more like him. We're to be people who are more conformed to Christ's image. And one of the primary ways that we can do that is serving like he served us. So here's what we want to do this morning. First of all, we want to just briefly look at the servant mentality of Jesus Christ. We want to see how that permeated everything that he did. And then we want to see how he built that into the lives of his disciples, how he built that service ethic into their ideas. Then very briefly, we will look at the first century church, the very first church, the first church of Jerusalem, and see how once the disciples caught hold of this, that they moved that into that first church and how it affected everything that was done in that church. And then finally, in conclusion, we'll say, well, now how do we do this? How do we make that a reality in our lives? So let's go ahead and take a look at this just very briefly. We're going to begin with a servant attitude was foundational to all that Christ came to accomplish. We saw this cute little video on the birth of Jesus. And there we make much of the humility of it, don't we? We make much of the whenever we have a little production or tell a story. In there is this idea, it's this selfless little pure gal. It's this loving man who is a righteous man who doesn't quite understand what's going on, but he's willing to obey what the angel tells him to do. We talk about how they went to Bethlehem and how there was no room in the inn, and so they go back to this stable. And that stable probably, as we think it through, was probably a cave. And because it was such a busy, busy time that they probably hadn't been cleaned in a while. And although there is this, there's this humble setting, often we tend to kind of put a little spotlight that's filtered somehow on it, don't we, and make it kind of precious. And anywhere that a child is born is precious. But there is a sense that there was a particular reason for Jesus Christ being born in this rather, in the King James puts it, a mean setting. A setting that is very humble, that is very servant-like, that is not exactly how we would expect the King of Glory to come into the world. And the whole critical point is that he was born because it was critical to demonstrate what he came to do. So just as we look through his life, we see, first of all, a servant's birth. And I want us to understand what it meant for Christ, the second person of the Trinity, the one who holds all things together, the one who put all things together, to come and take on what Philippians 2, 6 through 8 says is the form of a servant, or more literally, the form of a slave, a bondservant, a doulos is basically what that means. What we're saying here is that Christ did not come as a king, although he would be one. He did not come as a priest, although he was, according to the order of Melchizedek. He did not come to reign and to rule. He came to save. And the way to do that was to come taking upon himself, putting on the coat of humanity, and to come as a slave to his Father's will and a servant to mankind's need. And that's really the most important thing for us to understand about the birth, is that he came for the purpose of ministering, of serving to mankind, and as a slave to what his Father had called him to do. And so when Paul exults in this wonderful passage about how God became the perfect God-man, he says, although he existed in the form of God, he did not regard that equality with God a thing to be grasped, but emptied himself by taking the form of a bondservant and humbling himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross. From the moment he breathed his first until the moment he breathed his last, everything about him was the idea of serving what his Father called him to do for the sake of humanity. So this whole idea here is that a servant attitude was foundational to everything he came to accomplish, and his life proves it. We work our way through the book of John, and we see us constantly have this idea about, it's not my will, but his will that I am seeking to accomplish. He's in Sychar. He's by the well. The woman has come up to him from Samaria. It's a woman that the disciples are surprised that he would even talk to, let alone accept water from. And yet he talks to them about how he has the words and the water of life, and he begins to share the gospel with her. The disciples come back, they have food for him to eat, and they are surprised that he won't take a break. Instead, he continues to minister to the needs of this person. And he says to them, my food is to do the will of him who sent me and to accomplish his work. Now, just even on the surface of it, when we look at that verse, it sounds like the words of a servant, doesn't it? It sounds like the words that a servant would do. A master would say to a servant, your will is to do the will, do my will, and accomplish the work that I have given you to do. So he understood all through his life that his purpose was to do the will of his master. And in John 5 and 30, he says, I don't seek my own will, but I do the will of the one who sent me. In John 6 and 30, he says, I came down from heaven not to do my own will, but the will of him who sent me. And in case we don't get the idea, in Mark 10 and 45, he makes it so clear. He says, even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life a ransom for many. So we see that he came to be a servant, and it showed in his birth. He came to be a servant, and it showed in his life. And as Adam so ably showed us today, he shows himself to be a servant in his death as well. Remember, he's in the Garden of Gethsemane, and he's praying to his Father, and he prays that final prayer, and he says to him, Father, if you are willing, remove this cup from me, but in the end, not my will, but yours be done. So all the way through his life, his whole idea was to be a slave to his Father and to serve mankind as his Father had instructed him to do. And this is what he was passing on to his disciples. He understood that a servant attitude was absolutely foundational for everything that the disciples were going to accomplish in his absence. So he begins to give them help and understand the importance of what greatness looks like. Now, whether it be the first century or the 21st century, it's hard for people to wrap their minds still around this idea. Every now and then, we make much of a person who is a servant. Every now and then. But the preponderance of TV shows and editorials and magazines and billboards are all around just the absolutely opposite, and that is the greater you are, the more you are served. And the whole idea is for us to get to the greatest position, whether it be in position of power, a position of money, or a larger reputation, and when that happens, the more you are served. And that's kind of the whole setting. But in God's system, Everything is turned upside down according to what his son came to do. I have always been a real thankful for R.C.H. Lenski. Lenski wrote a commentary series a number of years ago, back in the 50s. One of my most precious possessions is his commentary series that my father-in-law passed on to me. And even when I take it down today, I still smell them. They smell like him. They smell like his office. And he says in this particular setting, R.C.H. Lenski says this: in God's kingdom, great men are not sitting on top of lesser men. And that just put a picture in it for me, because I think of the Roman Empire, right? I think the people who are great, and what do they got? They're on these little carriages, and who's driving the carriage? Well, the slaves, the servants. He says, that's not how it is in God's system. Great men are not sitting on top of lesser men, but bearing lesser men on their backs. Bearing lesser men on their backs. In other words, in God's kingdom, everything is upside down. Everything is topsy-turvy, according to the world has to say. That's the essential truth that we need to understand and embrace. That to be great in God's kingdom, you must first and foremost be a servant. And in Matthew chapter 20, that's the only passage that we're really going to look at today, so I ask you to turn there with me. Matthew chapter 20, verse 20 through 28, we have a very, very familiar passage, but a passage that we need to think through as we look at this idea of greatness coming through serving. This was something he tried to teach to his disciples all the time, but it seems like from the beginning, if you look at the Gospels carefully, you see that there's this undercurrent all the time with his disciples, that there is a sense in their mind that he's going to bring in a literal physical kingdom that is going to overthrow the Roman Empire, and that they are going to be the ones who sit in positions of priority and preeminence when that kingdom comes in. And so they're happy to leave everything behind, and as long as once the kingdom is established, they will be in positions of greatness. So, through their lives, they're always asking this question. It's over and over, here and there. They're always battling over who is the greatest. You know, when you're 12-year-old boy, that's kind of a normal discussion. You have a lot of discussion about my dad's bigger than you and your dad, and my dad could beat up your dad, and have all those kind of conversations. But there's always a conversation of somehow making yourself greater than another person. Now, as we grow up, it doesn't change. It just becomes camouflaged a little bit, doesn't it, as we go through life. But he's trying to help them understand that they have the wrong thought process about it. And we see that the mother of James and John, who is probably the mother of Jesus, Mary's sister, is pretty close that's probably the truth. And she comes to him. This in the middle of all this debate, she's pulling the family ties. She comes into him. She says to Jesus, "I have something to request of you. I have something to ask of you." She even bows before him as the king. She says, "May I make a request?" And in another passage, the companion passage, it says, "I want you to do whatever I ask you to do before I ask you to do it." And Jesus, of course, kind of puts the brakes on that whole situation. But here's her request in verse 21. She says, "Command that when your kingdom comes, that these two sons of mine may sit one on your right and one on the left." You know how that works in kingdoms. The king has his throne, and sitting on the right and on the left are kind of his main henchmen, the people who he goes to, and they have the most control and the most power. And Jesus says to her, he says, you don't know what you're asking. Are you able to drink the cup that I'm able to drink? And she's thinking, and he's thinking about the death that is to come. She's probably thinking about the toasts that will take place in the kingdom. And they said to him, "Absolutely, we can do that. There's no problem with that." And he says, "You don't know it yet, but my cup you shall drink. But to sit on my right and the left, that's not your privilege to ask for, nor is it mine to give, but it's for those for whom it has been prepared by my Father." Now, verse 24 is fun, and we've talked about it, I'm sure, many times in the past. But hearing this, the 10 became incensed, is literally what it says. They were indignant with the other two. And we'd like to think that they had the right motives, and they're saying, who would ever think if we're servants of the Most High God, and we're going at his beck and call, and we'll do whatever he calls us to do, who would ever think to ask that? Actually, they were indignant because they didn't think of it first. And they were in positions where they were saying, oh, that was my big moment to get the glory. And yet Jesus shuts it down in verse 25 when he says these most important rules, sets these most important rules. He says, you know how the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great men exercise authority. It is not this way amongst you, but whoever wishes to become a great amongst you must be a servant. By the way, which is the word where we get deaconos, or for deacon, someone who is a server. And whoever wishes to be the primary, the preeminent, the first, must go even beyond that. They must be a slave. Two levels, right? Servants, hired, okay, and they can come in and go as they please. Slaves, sold out too. Don't have any choice in the matter. He says, if you want to be preeminent in the kingdom of God, first and foremost, you must be a person who is a slave sold out to what Jesus Christ has called you to do. And then what does he use for an example? He uses for an example himself. Verse 28, he says, even look at me, the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life a ransom for many. So he sets it up with his disciples. Now, it takes them a long time to get this. He continues to teach them this idea of humility in John chapter 13. We all know it so well, we don't even have to go there. We read in a companion passage of John chapter 13 that even as they're coming down the street, coming to the door of the house of the upper room, they're still arguing about who is going to be preeminent in the kingdom. Right up to the point where they walk in the door, and they're at this point where they're ready to do a ceremonial meal, and everyone knows that at a ceremonial meal, somebody's got to wash the feet, but they're so incensed with each other, they're so battling over who's the greatest, and nobody is willing to say, all right, I'll do it, I'll wash the feet. And finally, they all sit down at the table with the dirty feet, and remember, it's not like our table, it's the reclining table. So there's Peter's dirty feet in my face, and I'm going, come on, why didn't you at least wash your feet? And Jesus, I just love the servant attitude that just won't quit. He continues to serve. He takes off the outer robe. He puts a towel around himself. Slowly goes from person to person to person to person. And at the end, he says to him, do you get it? Do you understand why I did that? If I then, the Lord, washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. I gave you an example to do just as I did to you. Now, here's the good news. They finally got it. It took them a long time. And really, I, mom and dads right now, I want to give you hope for your kids. I want to give you hope. I was talking to a guy in between service, and he was just talking about something that was happening with his 23-year-old kid. And he says, of course, you know, when you're at 23, you reach the epic of all intelligence and learning and wisdom. And I said, that's a good statement. I'm going to steal that. But what we find out is later in life, we figure out, I guess I didn't know everything. And all that serving that you did all those through the years, somehow along the line, that's going to show up and it's going to reap dividends somewhere down the road. I still think sometimes, I mentioned it a couple of times, but I'm reminded how my dad would come home on Friday nights and he worked a hard manual labor job, 55 hours a week was pretty normal for him. Yet Friday night he would come home and he'd drag the boat out and he'd hook it up and they'd make all the sandwiches and they'd fill everything in and they'd go get gas and they'd make sure that everything was set and all the ropes were set. Then in the morning, the crack of dawn, he'd come and wake us up and he'd put us in the back of the car and we were able to sleep. He'd go to take us to the lake, he'd back the boat in, he'd do all that sort of stuff. He'd wake us up, he's put it in this boat, and for the rest of the day, he did these big circles around the lake. And just we'd circle the lake once, and then he'd throw out another kid and he'd water ski. And then he'd circle the lake again and throw out another kid and he'd water ski. And I was thinking to myself when I was a kid, isn't this fun? And I never thought to ask myself, I wonder if this is fun for my dad. You know, this is his day off. And he was really involved at church on Sunday, so this really was his day off. And it just dawned on me one day, I don't know, 30, 35, something like that, that was a really selfless thing that he did every single Saturday during the summer, just over and over and over and over. And this whole idea was, is that he was developing in us, not just through that, but he was just developing in us what it means to serve people that you truly love. And so it seems like just after Pentecost, it helped that they received the Spirit. That helps a lot. But it seems at that point in time, they finally got the idea of what service is all about, and they began to implement that into the first century church. And if you read Acts 1 through 6, and primarily those early portions of the book of Acts, you see that service is the ethic that is the glue that holds that church together. Look at how it just holds it together in just a variety of ways. By Acts 2:45, they're sharing with all as needed. By Acts 2:46, they're breaking bread house to house. See the servant attitude that is leading to all this. They were toiling, and particularly the apostles, were toiling selflessly and courageously on a day-by-day basis on behalf of the people. They were giving sacrificially. We learned that from Jason's fine exposition of the words and works of Barnabas. They were ministering to the widows, and it was to the point in time where actually set aside people called servers, deacons, for the purpose of ministering to those people who were in need. If you looked at what held that wonderful church together in a time of difficulty and later on in a time of persecution, it certainly was their sound doctrine. There's no doubt about that. But the glue that held them together in community is that they were willing in whatever season, in whatever situation, in whatever difficulty they were in, to see the needs of others as more important and to serve them in their times of need. Now, for us, what do we do with this? I believe that the same attitude that was Jesus, the same attitude that he instilled into his disciples, the same attitude that made that first century church work is the same attitude we have if we are going to be effective servants to this, to each other, and to our community. So what I just want to do in closing is just look at a few principles that will help us become better servants. The first comes to us from Galatians 5 and 13. And Paul speaks about the issue of freedom in there, but he also speaks about this idea of serving one another. And I love the way he prefaces it. He says, through love, serve one another. That really is a critical setting for what we're trying to accomplish. Ever serve somebody out of duty? Ever serve somebody just because you had to? There's consequence if you don't. It's really quite different than serving someone out of love. When you have a heart of love and you're seeing another person's needs is more important than yourself, it's actually something that you enjoy to do. The husband and father is on lunch break with one of his friends on Friday. And he's saying, I'm really looking forward to next week. It's just a 4-day week. I have an extra day off. And his friend says, why are you looking forward to it so much? What are you going to do? He says, well, I'm really excited about it because I'm going to fix my son's bicycle and I'm going to paint my daughter's room. And the guy looks at him and he says, that doesn't sound like a whole lot of fun. He says, it does if you love your kids. And really, that's the truth of the matter. When we love someone, the things that are normally chores, the things that we don't find to be that edifying to ourselves, when we love someone, we love to serve them. We enjoy seeing the smile on their face after we're done with the project, and they're saying, thank you so much. I appreciate that you did that. So it begins with a heart of love. And of course, a heart of love begins with the filling of the Spirit. And as we walk in love, we find that it puts us in a position where we enjoy, want to think of serving one another. So it starts with love. Secondly, the best way to learn how to serve well is to serve beside faithful servants. That's how disciples figured it out, right? Jesus would get up in the morning, he would serve them. midway through the afternoon, he'd still be serving them. As we went to bed at night, he'd still be serving them. He served people throughout his entire life. And slowly but surely, that began to make sense. They began to pull that together. So if you say to yourself, I'm not very good at serving, I'm not a very good servant of people, not a very good servant of my family, I would suggest that you look in this church for someone who is a really good servant heart and ask if you can just walk along beside them for a while. Because we learn how to serve by seeing servants in action. The third thing is we need to make service a deliberate daily choice. You know what a difference it makes when in the morning I say to myself, today is a day that I'm going to deliberately keep my eyes on Christ's mandate to serve others. And not just, you know, the people in the church, or not just my wife, or not just those sort of things, but I'm saying to myself, I'm going to look out for opportunities to serve today. And the funny thing about it is that when we come in with that deliberate attitude, an idea of bringing service to someone else, God opens the doors. Last Tuesday, I was painting, and we're doing a little work in our house, painting some bookshelves and all that. My little neighbor from Ecuador comes over. She's actually shorter than my wife, and she's 80. Is she shorter than you? Yeah, I think so. Yeah, she's 85 years old, and she still speaks with this really thick Ecuadorian accent. And she says to me, "Bob," and I can't do Ecuadorian very well, so you'll just have my plugs no work. Excuse me, my plugs. You know, my plugs no work. My plugs no work. And she's, you know, point, I'm still going, her plugs don't work, Pammy says. Oh, your plugs don't work. Will you look? So I say, yeah, I'll come over and look, you know. So I do the things with a breaker box and do all that sort of thing. And sure enough, her plugs don't work. But me and electronics don't get along. We are not good buddies. And I have had many poor experiences with electronics. So I said, I can't help you with this. I think you're going to need an electrician. And she says, I have no money. And I said, okay. So I talked to a person in our church who knows electronics. And I said, would you be willing to help my neighbor? He says, sure, I'd be willing to help your neighbor. She didn't have much money. He says, oh, that's nothing. That's a really easy thing to fix. It's probably this. I'll be over there on Tuesday. I can't wait for Tuesday. Think how cool that is. Because we have an opportunity, just as a church, because I'm a part of this church and this person is part of this church, we have an opportunity to serve her. And who knows what that might end up with? Who knows if she asks, why would this person come and not charge me? Why would you serve me in that way? Could it be an opportunity to share the gospel with her? I really think it might be. And really, that's what we see. When we make it a deliberate choice, instead of saying, I'm busy here with what I have my task to do, instead we say, I'll come over and take a peek at that. I'll see if I can help. But we build in relationships opportunity for the gospel to be worked out in words. Oh, love that whole idea. Preach the gospel all the time. St. Francis of Assisi says, if necessary, use words. And I think that is so powerful, the idea that I would move into a person's life so that eventually they might ask me, what is inside of you that makes you do that? So make service a deliberate choice. Finally, practice seeing the needs of others as more important than your own. Here's the thing that I find in my life. It takes lots of practice. I need to practice that. It's when I wake up in the morning, I am immediately thinking of my needs and what I need to deal with. I need practice at seeing the needs of others as more important than my own. I need to simply say, what needs, how deliberately can I move into people's lives in a way that Christ might be furthered? Now, finally, being as I want to always give you opportunities to serve, and I want you to take this and immediately put it into work in your life, I'd like to give you one more application. If you want to serve, I'm going to ask you to simply do this. Stick around today and help decorate. I know, it's a shameless plug, but I'm really trying to say something by that. Because what will happen over the next 3 weeks is people will walk into this church who are not believers, who never walk into church. You will invite your family and you invite your friends and people from the neighborhood will come in. People come in here just for these particular services. And when we as a family take the time to put it all together, instead of 10 people here staying here till 10 o'clock at night, working their hands to the bone, instead if we all gather together and we work together and we serve one another, we put this place in kind of a nice looking setting where we can reach out to people and minister to them. And here's the good news. We'll serve you lunch so that later on you can serve one another. I mean, how does it get any better than that? So I'll be out on the edge of the parking lot taking names as people leave. And I will serve you this week by coming to your house. No. It's always by grace. But as you have served in the past, I would ask that you would serve even again today. Lord, thank you for this congregation, a congregation made up of servants. Amen. And you are dismissed.